This is podcast number 103 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today we're discussing the decline of Spain. I want to jump right into sharing a chapter from Charles Morris's Historical Tales, the book about Spain, and read it to you without commentary, other than to have you consider another example of what happens when you use force or compulsion, even with good intent, versus allowing free thought to happen. Here is today's daily sampler. The causes of Spain's decadence. The golden age of Spain began in 1492, in which year the conquest of Granada extinguished the Arab dominion, and the discovery of America by Columbus opened a new world to the enterprise of the Spanish cavaliers. It continued during the reigns of Charles I and Philip II, extending over a period of about a century, during which Spain was the leading power in Europe and occupied the foremost position in the civilized world. In Europe, its possessions included the Netherlands and important regions in Italy, while its king, Charles I, ruled as Charles V over the German Empire, possessing a dominion in Europe only surpassed by that of Charlemagne. Under Philip II, Portugal became a part of the Spanish realm, and with it its colony of Brazil, so that Spain was the unquestioned owner of the whole continent of South America, while much of North America lay under its flag. Wealth flowed into the coffers of this broad kingdom in steady streams, the riches of America overflowing its treasury. Its fleet was the greatest, its army the best trained and most irresistible in Europe. It stood as the bulwark against the mighty Ottoman power before which the other nations trembled and checked its career of victory at Lepanto. In short, as above said, it was for a brief period the leading power in Europe and appeared to have in it the promise of a glorious career. But though the tree was so flourishing at its summit, there was a canker at its root, the eating bane of superstition and bigotry, before whose insidious attacks the far-spreading realm was soon to shrink and decay, and in time to decline into a position of insignificance that would have seemed incredible in the 16th century. Spain stood as the right hand of the Church of Rome, the bulwark against the growing flood of reform, and in her strenuous effort to suppress free thought, to make all minds move in the same channel, all men think alike on religious subjects, she at once utterly failed in her purpose and ruined herself in the attempt. Two methods were adopted in this ruinous effort, the one that of exile of the infidel and heretic, the other that of torture and execution. These were extraordinary methods for the propagation of religious faith, but by them Spain succeeded in suppressing all visible heresy within her confines, and in her extirpation of free thought, destroyed herself. From being the strongest and most enterprising nation of Europe, she sank into the position of one of the weakest and the least progressive of European kingdoms, her population decreasing within a century or two to nearly one half, while the demon of dullness and stolid conservatism spread its blasting wings over the entire land. The first stage in this crusade of fanaticism was the expulsion of the Jews, a people whose enterprise, progress in science and the arts, and genius for business had been of immense value to Spain. Under the Goths, the Hebrew race suffered pitiless persecution, from which they were relieved while the Arabs ruled in Spain. Favored by the tolerant caliphs, the Jews became active agents in the development of civilization, but the protection they enjoyed under the Muslims was lost under the Christians, who had no sooner reconquered Spain than their ignorant fanaticism led them to a violent persecution of their Hebrew subjects, who became objects of scorn and hatred, and in some places were exposed to pitiless robbery and indiscriminate massacre. Many of the unfortunate Jews, seeking to escape persecution, embraced Christianity, but their conversion was doubted. They were subjected to constant espionage, and the least suspicion of indulging in their old worship exposed them to the dangerous charge of heresy, a word of frightful omen in Spain. It was to punish these delinquent Jews that in 1480 the Inquisition was introduced, and at once began its frightful work, no less than 2,000 heretics being burned alive in 1481, while 17,000 were reconciled, a word of mild meaning elsewhere, but which in Spain signified torture, confiscation of property, loss of citizenship, and frequently imprisonment for life in the dungeons of the Inquisition. Such was the frightful penalty for daring to think otherwise on religious subjects than the Church of Rome said men should and must think. The year 1492, in which Spain gained glory by the conquest of Granada and the discovery of America, brought her deep dishonor through an act of barbarous cruelty, the expulsion of the Jews. The edict for this was signed by Ferdinand and Isabella at Granada, March 30, 1492, and decreed that all unbaptized Jews, without regard to sex, age, or condition, should leave Spain before the end of the next July and never return thither, under penalty of death and confiscation of property. Every Spaniard was forbidden to give aid in any form to a Jew after the date named. The Jews might sell their property and carry the proceeds with them in bills of exchange or merchandise, but not in gold or silver. This edict came like a thunderbolt to the Israelites. At a tyrant's word, they must go forth as exiles from the land in which they and their forefathers had dwelt for ages, break all their old ties of habit and association, and be cast out helpless and defenseless, marked with the brand of infamy, among nations who held them in hatred and contempt. Under the unjust terms of the edict, they were forced to abandon most of the property which they had spent their lives in gaining. It was impossible to sell their effects in the brief time given, in a market glutted with similar commodities, for more than a tithe of their value. As a result, their hard-won wealth was frightfully sacrificed. One chronicler relates that he saw a house exchanged for an ass, and a vineyard for a suit of clothes. In Aragon, the property of the Jews was confiscated for the benefit of their creditors, with little regard to its value. As for the bills of exchange, which they were to take instead of gold and silver, it was impossible to obtain them to the amount required in that age of limited commerce, and here again they were mercilessly robbed. The migration was one of the most pitiable known in history. As the time fixed for their departure approached, the roads of the country swarmed with emigrants, young and old, strong and feeble, sick and well, some on horses or mules, but the great multitude on foot. The largest division, some 80,000 in number, passed through Portugal, whose monarch taxed them for a free passage through the dominions, but, wiser than Ferdinand, permitted certain skillful artisans among them to settle in his kingdom. Those who reached Africa and marched towards Fez, where many of their race resided, were attacked by the desert tribes, robbed, slain, and treated with the most shameful barbarity. Many of them, half dead with famine and in utter despair, returned to the coast, where they consented to be baptized with the hope that they might be permitted to return to their native land. Those who sought Italy contracted an infectious disease in the crowded and filthy vessels which they were obliged to take, a disorder so malignant that it carried off 20,000 of the people of Naples during the year and spread far over the remainder of Italy. As for the Jews, hosts of them perished of hunger and disease, and of the whole number expelled, estimated at 160,000, only a miserable fragment found homes at length in foreign lands, some seeking Turkey, others gaining refuge and protection in France and England. As for the effect of the migration on Spain, it must suffice here to quote the remark of a monarch of that day. Do they call this Ferdinand a politic prince who can thus impoverish his own kingdom and enrich ours? The Jews of Spain thus disposed of, a similar policy was adopted towards the Moors. The treaty made with them at the time of the surrender of Granada was not kept. Ximenes and other bigoted priests attempted to convert them by force and drive them into insurrection. This was suppressed, and then punishment began. So rigid was the inquiry that it seemed as if all the people of Granada would be condemned as guilty, and in mortal dread many of them made peace by embracing Christianity, while others sold their estates and migrated to Barbary. In the end, all who remained escaped persecution only by consenting to be baptized, the total number of converts being estimated at 50,000. The name of Moors, which had superseded that of Arabs, was now changed to that of Moriscos, by which these unfortunate people were afterwards known. The ill faith shown to the Moors of the plain gave rise to an insurrection in the mountains, in which the Spaniards suffered a severe defeat. The insurgents, however, were soon subdued, and most of them, to prevent being driven from their homes, professed the Christian faith. By the free use of torture and the sword, the kings of Spain had succeeded in adding largely to their Christian subjects. The Moriscos became the most skillful, industrious agriculturists of Spain, but the bigoted monarchs, instigated by fanatical priests, would not let them alone. Irritating edicts were from time to time issued. In 1560, the Moriscos were forbidden to employ African slaves for fear that they might make infidels of them. This was a severe annoyance, for the wealthy farmers depended on the labor of these slaves. In 1563, they were forbidden to possess arms except under license. In 1566, still more oppressive edicts were passed. They were no longer to use the Arabic language or wear the Moorish dress, and the women were required to go about with their faces unveiled, a scandalous thing among Mohammedans. Their weddings were to be conducted in public after the Christian forms. Their national songs and dances were interdicted, and they were even forbidden to indulge in warm baths, bathing being a custom of which the Spaniard of that day appears to have disapproved. The result of these oppressive edicts was a violent and dangerous insurrection, which involved nearly all the Moriscos of Spain and continued for more than 2 years, requiring all the power of Spain for its suppression. Don Juan of Austria, the victor at Lepanto, led the Spanish troops, but he had a difficult task, the Moriscos sheltered in their mountain fastnesses, making a desperate and protracted resistance, and showing a warlike energy equal to that which had been displayed in the defense of Granada. The end of the war was followed by a decree from Philip II that all the Moors of Granada should be removed into the interior of the country, their lands and houses being forfeited, and nothing left them but their personal effects. This act of confiscation was followed by the reduction to a state of serfdom in their new homes, no one being permitted to change his abode without permission under a very severe penalty. If found within 10 leagues of Granada, they were condemned. If between the ages of 10 and 17, to the galleys for life. If older, to the punishment of death. The dispersal of the Moriscos of Granada, while cruel to them, proved to be the greatest benefit to Spain. Wherever they went, the effects of their superior skill and industry were soon manifested. They were skilled not only in husbandry, but in the mechanic arts, and their industry gave a new aspect of prosperity to the provinces to which they were banished, while the valleys and hillsides of Granada, which had flourished under their cultivation, sank into barrenness under the unskilled hands of their successors. Enough had not yet been done to satiate Spanish bigotry. The Moriscos were not Spaniards and could not easily become so while deprived of all civil rights. There was a suspicion that at heart they might still be Muslims. This was a possibility not to be endured in Orthodox Spain. Under Philip III, a king as intolerant as his father, and unlike him, timid and incapable, the final act came. Under priestly influence, he was induced to sign an edict for the expulsion of the Moriscos, and this quiet and industrious people, 1 million in number, were in 1610, like the Jews before them, forced to leave their homes in Spain. It is not necessary to repeat the story of the suffering which necessarily followed so barbarous an act. What has been said of the circumstances attending the expulsion of the Jews will suffice. That of the Moriscos was not so inhuman in its consequences, but it was serious enough. Fortunately, in view of the intense impolicy and deep intolerance indicated in the act, its evil effects reacted upon its advocates. To the Moriscos, the suffering was personal. To Spain, it was national. As France half ruined herself by expelling the Huguenots, the most industrious of her population, Spain did the same in expelling the Moriscos, to whose skill and industry she owed so much of her prosperity. So it must ever be when bigotry is allowed to control the policy of states. France recovered from the evil offsets of her mad act. Spain never did. The expulsion of the Moriscos was one of the most prominent causes of her decline, and no indications of a recovery have yet been shown. The expulsions of the Jews and Moriscos was not sufficient to satisfy the intolerant spirit of Spain. Heresy had made its way even into the minds of Spaniards. Sons of the Church themselves had begun to think in other lines than those laid down to them by the priestly guardians of their minds. Protestant books were introduced into the ever-faithful land, and a considerable number of converts to Protestantism were made. Upon these heretics, the Inquisition descended with all its frightful force. Philip, in a monstrous edict, condemned all to be burned alive who bought, sold, or read books prohibited by the Church. The result was terrible. The land was filled with spies. Arrests were made on all sides. The instruments of torture were kept busy. In all the principal cities of Spain, the monstrous spectacle of the auto de fe was to be seen, multitudes being burned at the stake for having dared to let what the priests deemed the venom of free thought enter their minds. The total effect of this horrible system of persecution we can only epitomize. Thousands were burned at the stake, thousands imprisoned for life after terrible torture, thousands robbed of their property, and their children condemned to poverty and opprobrium. And the kingdom of Christ, as the popes of that day estimated it, was established in Spain. The bigoted kings and fanatical ecclesiastics of Spain had succeeded. Heresy was blotted out from Spain, and Spain was blotted out from the ranks of enlightened nations. Freedom of thought was at an end. The mind of the Spaniard was put in fetters. Spain, under the somber shadow of the Inquisition, was shut out from the light which was breaking over the remainder of Europe. Literature moved in narrow channels. Philosophy was checked. The domain of science was closed. Progress was at an end. Spain stood still while the rest of the world was sweeping onward. And she stands still today, her mind in the 15th century. The decadence of Spain is due solely to religious bigotry, which manifested itself in the expulsion of the Jews and the Moriscos, the fires of the Inquisition, and that suppression of free thought which, wherever shown, is a fatal barrier to the progress of mankind.